Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Today I was asked a question that we all probably at least ask ourselves, if not ask others. How do I know I'm practicing correctly? How do I know I'm actually progressing on the path? And it's a good question, particularly to ask ourselves. And there's a simple way to look at it, as the Buddha taught, is to just pay attention to am I increasing in wholesome qualities, skillful qualities, or am I decreasing? And are those things that are unskillful, unwholesome, are they falling away, or are they not? So that's a fairly simple way of looking at it. We have a fairly strong propensity for either doubting or deluding ourselves, so it's helpful to have a bit more detail to reflect on. And one of the ways that the Buddha also gave for reflecting on what's proper practice, what's a good indication of development and growth, is a teaching that he gave to Mahapajapati Gotami, the first bhikkhuni. It was the Buddha's aunt, stepmother. And at one point in time, she came to the Buddha and asked for a teaching or advice so that she could go and practice in solitude and put forth effort in retreat, seclusion. And the Buddha gave a fairly simple teaching, but to practicing and with the confidence that knowing, this is the Dhamma, this is the vinaya, or the training, the discipline. This is the teacher's instructions. And then he taught on this to recognize that whatever is arising in the mind, what is it leading to? And said, and for it to align with, say, the Dhamma, the discipline, the teacher's instructions, that it would be that which led to dispassion and not to passion. It would be leading to, there'd be qualities leading to detachment and not to bondage or attachment. It'd be qualities that would be leading to shedding and not to accumulation. And be those qualities which led to modesty and not to self-aggrandizement. And be qualities that led to contentment and not to discontent. And it'd be qualities that led to seclusion or solitude and not to seeking company or not being entangled with too many people and things. And the qualities which were leading to the arising of energy and effort and not to laziness, and the qualities that would be leading to arising in not being or being unburdensome and not being burdensome or being easy to support or look after rather than being difficult to support or look after. So that these particular qualities are looking at recognizing what they signify or what they're drawing one close to, and you realize that their essence or their common quality and that is around a drawing close to a relinquishment to a sense of that one quality is shedding is really interesting. Say shedding rather than to the tendency to accumulate, because there's a habit in the human condition to seek for our security and comfort, ease in the things around us, and that they tend to burden us more than anything. So that as we reflect, what leads to disenchantment, to dispassion? And not in a sense of aversion or pushing away, but a dispassion in the sense of there's a fading away of entanglement or a fading away of there's a cooling, a settling that's taking place in the heart. Sense of being detached rather than seeking things of bondage and attachment, and that quality of shedding rather than accumulating, and a sense of modesty rather than self-aggrandizement, the relinquishing of the sense of self. And, I mean, there can be false modesty, which is really driven by a sense of me being modest. But that's not the purpose of the Buddha's teachings. But there's that sense of just not having to carry a sense of self and me and mine, and that it's similar to that the last quality of being unburdensome rather than being burdensome, because there's a that's especially as a monastic, then that's often and quite rightly interpreted in terms of being easy to look after, being easy to support, not making demands on people, not making requests. And you think, well, you first the mind goes to material things, but it's also that people can be burdensome with their just that sense of me, that imposition of me on others, and some people take up a lot of space, and there's a kind of self-aggrandizement that is a part of that, and it can be in a positive way, it can be in a negative way, but it's just having to prop it up. You realize, this shedding is such a relief for oneself, a relief for the heart, to be able to put it down. Oh, yeah, and really, this is Dhamma. This is the training. This is the teacher's instruction, the Buddha. This is what the Buddha pointed to as a as an opportunity for release, relief, a contentment, leading to contentment rather than discontent. That ability to be comfortable, whether one has a little, whether one has a lot, just being contented and comfortable. That sense of seclusion or solitude, rather than seeking company, seeking engagement. You know, and it can manifest in many ways. No, one doesn't have to be a, I'm trying to think of, misanthropic hermit. It's not the point of the book. Say that is, it doesn't necessarily mean that one is a developing the Buddha's way, but it's a sense of the heart doesn't have to engage. One of the remember being struck one time. And of course, over the years, I've met many people who are like that. But I think the first time that it really hit me was I was a translator and attendant for a very senior Thai monk, and traveled. I traveled with him several times, but the first time, it really hit me. And he was very renowned. He was very respected. He had his monastery, had lots of people coming for his Dhamma talks. He was on radio, he was on television. And he was an incredibly good speaker. But being in the West, when it wasn't his first language, and it wasn't, he didn't really, he knew a little bit of English. But it was really interesting, so that when he didn't need to be speaking, then he was perfectly content to sit there. Even if he was surrounded by people, he'd just be quite content to be there. And you could see it was really, there was a sense of seclusion. And he wasn't having to, there certainly wasn't any self-aggrandizement there. He wasn't needing to put himself forward. He was just content within himself, peaceful within himself. There was a seclusion. That was really, to me, that was, I mean, he was a really, really good teacher. But to me, that was a stronger teaching than some of the what he actually said. His actual being was a wonderful example of somebody who was really living by Dhamma and reaping the fruits of the Dhamma. So that to be able to reflect from these different perspectives and to see what's this teaching, what's it leading to, and what is it trying to uncover. I think one of the things that I think is helpful is recognizing that, some of the things that we aspire to in, say, as spiritual practitioners, it isn't as if we're sort of, we're lacking dispassion and we have to get rid of our passion. It's more like, really the heart inclines, what makes it most happy and bright is dispassion. What makes us most happy and fulfilled is contentment. And these qualities that the Buddha points to. And we have to allow ourselves to draw close to that or to uncover that, because we do, it's the habits of the mind, it's the habits of the world that tend to clutter the mind, with passion, with accumulating, with discontent, with kind of socializing and company and And it's not as if they're bad, but it's just that it tends to cover over the opportunity for being really bright and peaceful and anchored in truth. So to realize, oh yeah, well, this practice is really giving us the opportunity to uncover or draw close to the qualities that are already within us. So that, say, like, you know, it isn't as though we're just really uncompassionate, cruel beings the inherent quality of the human mind responds to compassion, responds to loving kindness. And that's what we when we see it either within ourselves or see it in others, it resonates, and we want to draw close to it. So it's like recognizing that our practice is an opportunity for allowing the heart to do that and to get out of the way, and so that our cultivation of say of precepts is not just to keep a bunch of rules so that we can be disciplined and kept in line. It's more like, oh no, when we allow that those structures of body and speech give us the opportunity to shed the things that create conflict or dissonance or difficulty, and it allows us to draw close to the sense of well-being that arises when we've established ourselves in standards of and actions of conduct and speech that are harmless, that have integrity, have a virtue to it. And that brightens the heart. It's like it's just sort of getting a feel for it, getting to see that more clearly, allowing the heart to respond to it, not out of a say an ideological perspective or some kind of a belief system that if I keep these rules, then this is going to happen. It's more, you realize, this is how the heart responds. And we're uncovering the opportunity for well-being and harmony, really. You know, and similarly for our meditation, we can put so much effort into trying to, stop the mind from thinking, stop the mind from having those hindrances, stop the mind from wandering and being restless, and forget that we're all we're trying to do is uncover that inclination in the mind to be peaceful and to be at ease. And the other night, Ajahn Sujita was talking, talking around that element of, say, absorption, like absorbing. So that the absorbing into the qualities of coolness, steadiness, peacefulness within the heart. Those qualities are there, and we don't absorb into them. We look for something else to distract ourselves with, or we get obsessed with something that keeps us restless and confused. So this is what do I want to absorb into that's really wholesome and satisfying? That leads to contentment, that leads to dispassion. And to really tune into that And allow the heart, we're uncovering it. So that in our practice, we're using the teachings, we're using the guidance that the Buddha gives us. But it's, as we chant on a regular basis, this is, the Dhamma of the Buddhas is an opanayiko Dhamma. It's leading inwards. So that drawing it into the heart and uncovering what's there and in recognizing, oh, this is the Dhamma, this is the training, this is the teacher's instruction, this is what the Lord Buddha was teaching, to give us that confidence and to do that. So, part of it is also kind of an attitude we bring, again, when we're thinking of uncovering, that sense of shedding rather than to accumulating. A lot of us, what is it can we give to the practice? One of the fundamental, in a traditional Buddhist culture, one of the foundations or fundamental ways of being is generosity, is giving. And it's not just for a material exchange, or but it's for being able to allow the sense of self to drop away. And of course, the same thing applies to our sila, the meditation. But that, particularly that aspect of, it's more tangible maybe in that those aspects of giving and giving oneself to things, we have to allow the sense of self to drop away in order to give. Because so often, and I think particularly in a modern culture, and a modern Western culture, of course it's more like a modern global culture now, things are measured in terms of kind of a material exchange. What do I get out of it? So that we'll approach our spiritual practice in the same way. Okay, well, I'll do this for a while. I seem to be getting something out of it. And we don't give ourselves to it. It's sort of like it's measured. What am I getting? And we have to flip it around and say, what am I giving? What can I give? And it's when we give to it, actually the heart really opens. And that sense of self and self-obsession, self-fixation has an opportunity to drop away. And of course, that's where we feel really peaceful. And even when in our training and our practice, you realize, when is it that we feel really good about practice? When do we feel good about our training? And so often it's when we've really given something of ourselves to it. Or sometimes we've had to. I think in terms of doing something that's physically demanding in some way, in the sense, say, like on tudong or walking, you just have to, the mind says, I can't do it anymore. When are we going to get there? How am I going to, when we take on a work project, sewing your robes, it's like the novices are sewing their robes now, preparing for their bhikkhu ordination. And you start doing it, and it doesn't take very long. And that's taking me this long to get this. And how long is it going to take me to finish this? When is it going to be over? And you have to keep setting that aside and just keep doing it. And you realize when you do that, like setting aside the mind that's dissatisfied, discontent, resisting, and then putting the effort in. It's setting aside the sense of self, the sense of me, that is trying to measure, trying to get, trying to gain, and it's an opportunity to develop in this quality of selflessness. And the qualities that arise from that are, there's a peacefulness there. There's some years ago, there's a couple of the nuns did a Tudong walk in Wales. And they were like 6 weeks, 2 months or something. And one of the nuns was saying, after it, reflecting on it, he was saying how peaceful the mind was, how that peacefulness stayed with her. And it wasn't that they were meditating more when they were doing their walk, but it was from the giving of oneself to that action. He said, and the stability of mind, the clarity of mind that came, continued on longer than, say, being in a meditation retreat, where you're in a meditation retreat, the mind settles down for a while, and you come out of retreat, and then get discombobulated or difficulty in kind of reintegrating. But because there was that giving oneself, the constant reestablishing of mindfulness and attention to what had to be done in the moment, and sometimes engaging with people, sometimes not, but that constant giving up and giving to the action at the moment, that's where the mind really settled, the heart really cleared. So this quality of giving, you know, it plays such a huge role in the, this is Dhamma, this is the Vinaya, this is the Buddha's teachings. The result is one of well-being and relief, release. Really plugging into that capacity of the human heart to overcome or to relinquish its ignorance, its delusions. It's not that we can't do it. It's not that that capacity isn't there. It's inherent within us. We have to uncover it. So that finding the ways that we can uncover it, and that's, the whole path, that's its purpose, that's its goal. Just learning how to reflect on it, experiment with it, and to find the ways that work for us to help uncover and connect us with these aspects of truth. To offer that for reflection this evening. Handamayam dhamma kitaya sadhu karam.